Blog Talk Radio.
General's quarters. Security, condition 3.
GQ, security 3, sir. General quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
All right, you folks, you know I love that doorman. He doesn't let anybody in Madame Perry's salon that doesn't belong, but the people he does let in are all the best people in the world. And good evening. Welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon. I'm your host and cruise director, Madame Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry or J-Mod or J-Modette in the over in the Brit with my Brit friends. But just want to say thanks, first of all, to everybody that's been subscribing to the show and sharing it and downloading it. The more people subscribe, just makes it even more exciting for me. This show gets more and more fun for me, and I get so many good comments from everyone because of the guests I have on, and it's all thanks to you for listening and helping me get me good sponsors. But don't forget, you know, recently we had Bobby Rebel on, and you know she's going to give away a couple of copies of her book, How to Be a Financial Grown-Up, and we're going to announce the winners of that next Tuesday. Also, last Tuesday, we had Denny Tedesco, who created the video or the documentary, The Wrecking Crew, about the musicians. His father, Tommy Tedesco, was one of the Wrecking Crew, Carol Kay, Hal Blaine, Glenn Campbell. But yeah, get on over to his website, WreckingCrewFilm.com. And if you haven't seen or bought a copy of The Wrecking Crew, if you're anybody over 30 or 40, it's a soundtrack to your life, and it's just a beautiful film. Also, last night we had Cindy DeSilva, the manager of the Zombies, and talking about the book she created with them called The Odyssey, The Zombies in Words and Music. So, definitely get a copy of that. Tonight is, of course, another cool night. I have got, you know I love the drummer. You know it's the rhythm section that drives everything and keeps you going. People talk about the bass, and the bass is fine, but it's without the drums. Where you go? Where have you got? And tonight I've got one of the superstar drummers. Oh, actually, he's a multi-instrumentalist. He does so much more. But a superstar drummer, musician, songwriter, Joe Vitale. Joe, come on into Madame Perry's salon.
Hello. Thank you. I don't know what I'm doing in this salon yet, but it sounds like we're going to have fun.
It is. You know, it's like they said, you know, people told you it's like the inside of Genie's bottle. And like I was saying earlier, your old pal Kasim Sultan said he likes the Moroccan decor in here. And he might have left something. He might have left some money behind under the cushion. So you might want to just go ahead and just get that.
All right.
If not. Yeah, he won't mind. So I'm so glad to have you here. You know, you are such a busy man, and I'm just thrilled that we were able to finally find a time for you that you could give us here and be so generous. You've just come off, I think, if I understand correctly, you just come off the first leg of a tour with Joe Walsh right now, haven't you?
That's correct. We were out with it was Joe Walsh, and then also on the bill was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers doing their 40th anniversary tour. So it was
wow.
We're not done yet, but it was spectacular. It was really a lot of fun so far.
Now, when do you start back up? When you said that was the first leg. When
did
you crank back up again?
Back out in August. We're taking a little bit of time off right now. I got a little break, and we'll be back at it in August.
Fantastic. And where are you going to be starting when you get back in?
the first thing we're going to do, I think we're going to start, I haven't looked at the schedule, I think we're out in Texas.
Oh, okay. All right, very good. Well, I know it's going to be sold out everywhere and have a good time. So we got a lot of things to talk about, but I want to make sure everybody knows, if you're listening live tonight, of course, the show is always available for download on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. However, if you're listening live tonight, which is June 21st, you can call in or message in. Some people that can't call, Joe, they'll message in a question, like say if they're at work and having to listen on the fly or something. They'll send a message with a question or a comment for you, and I've got a few of those lined up already. But if you want to call in and talk to Joe, the number here is 646-716-9922, toll-free in the continental U.S. And I guess they could pretty much ask you about music, anything going on, plus your book, Backstage Passes. Now, I know your wife, Susie Vitale, wrote the book, right?
That's right. She wrote it.
And your wife is beautiful, by the way. I have a picture of her in the slideshow here, too, of her and you and Joe Vitale Jr. And am I pronouncing your name correctly? I got it from Joe Walsh that way.
Yes.
He says Vitale. Okay, good.
Yeah, some say Vitale, some say Vitale. Doesn't matter to me.
Okay. All right. So, okay, we already have a caller here, and I know this is our friend Duffy Odom from Adele, Georgia. So, Duffy, hi. Come on in back in Perry Salon and say hello to Joe.
Well, hello. Hello, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. You know, my brother had a copy of Psychedelic Soul when I was a teenager.
Oh my dear Lord.
we wore that thing out. I don't know where it is now, but I remember that orange and black Warner Brothers label.
Yeah, we were in high school, that's how long ago that was, and we got signed to Warner Brothers Records in high school, and which was actually very thrilling. And back then, and I can't believe you remember that record. That was like, it's got to be 50 years ago.
Yeah, I guess so. I was about 15 or 16, I guess.
Yeah, that was 1967. So it was 50 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I was 17 then, so I thought I was grown up by then. I thought I'd been through it all.
Yeah, we all did, yeah. Are you from, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm amazed you knew about that record, because we were all from Ohio, and I didn't know it got out that far. I didn't know we did that well.
Well, we did. We had a place called Swan Record Store in Buckhead in Atlanta, and they would get records in and just pile them all together. You could buy like five at a time for like a dollar and a half, and we'd just go in and just buy and buy, buy and buy and buy, and especially after I guess around the time we saw Monterey and realized things were happening, anything with the word psychedelic on it, we had to have it. So,
yeah, well, I miss those days where you could buy records.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, you could. We only had a 45 record player. It was...
Yeah.
The albums that we bought, we had to buy in EPs. You know, you'd buy four EPs, and that would make an album. And sometimes you'd have an extra song that wouldn't be on the album.
That's right.
So we'd just pile them on there, and they'd play one at a time, and then flip them all over and let them drop. Had thousands of them, I guess. Thousands of 45s.
Well, I thank you for a wonderful memory. Those were great days, and I miss them.
Joe and Duffy, one thing I've heard a lot of people say here when they talk about records is that it was one of the things I miss about having records or buying records was that it was something you did with other people. Of course, first you had that anticipation, and then you planned for it, you saved your money, you went to your favorite place to get records, whether it was, you know, a record store or Kmart or whatever, or Sears or Penny's, and you go get your record, and then, you know, you went home and friends, you got together to listen to it. Because, you know, you couldn't just down like you do now. So it was a group it was a group thing. You know, you got your best friends over. If you go to somebody's house and let's listen to some records. You know, I've got the new this whatever record. And it kind of missed that closeness about it. You know, it was something you shared with people.
That's very true. We used to do that. We used to go and buy them. We were so excited and we couldn't wait to go over to our friend's house and play them.
Oh, yeah. And the sock hops, you had to put your name on the records because you put it up on the table and that all gets scattered around and you'd play my record. I want you to play my record for my girlfriend. And then after it was over, you'd all go up and scramble. You'd have to find the one with your label on it. So that's right.
And we
you
used
made
to bring
sure
them,
you got your records back.
Right. We used to bring them to parties, and so you had to put your name on them for sure, or you'd definitely lose them.
Yeah, fun times. So where did you go?
It was great times.
What was your first band after that?
Well, that was a group called The Childs. And after that, I played with a whole bunch of bands for a while, for a couple of years, because The Childs broke up. And then I played with a bunch of different bands, and then all of a sudden I got a break. And in 1970, and started playing with Ted Nugent and the Amboy Dukes. And then from Ted Nugent and the Amboy Dukes, I went started with Joe Walsh in 1971.
Well, how long did you play for Ted Nugent?
I only played with Ted for about 6 months, and then Joe offered me a job, and I took it immediately because Joe was friend. We were friends. We both lived in Kent, Ohio, where Kent State University.
You went to school together? Yeah,
Kent State University.
Oh, wow. Yeah, around the time of the shooting, I imagine.
That's right. We were there when it all happened.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Something you never forget, I'm sure.
No, you don't forget that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, how was it? Those 6 months with Ted Nugent.
It was a little crazy. He was a wild man, but it was we had a lot of fun, and and it was my first national tour, so very memorable.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was at a concert, Ted Nugent concert in 1968 in Atlanta, with Jimi Hendrix and Soft Machine.
Oh, wow.
And they all played two shows, and something happened between the first show and the second show. We eventually found out what it was, that Nugent had challenged Hendrix to a guitar off. He wanted them to get on stage and challenge each other. And Hendrix went to the management at the Municipal Auditorium and said, If these guys play the second show, I'm not going to play.
I don't know about that. My money would have to go on Jimi Hendrix, no matter who the guitar player is.
that night it was Jimi Hendrix and Soft Machine, and Hendrix did two long sets. It was great. It was fantastic. But, so I was just wondering what Nugent was like back in the day. He's always had
a lot of energy. He was a rock and roller.
Yeah.
And what year was that, Joe?
I played with him in 1970.
Yeah, 70,
okay.
Yeah, I saw him in 70.
I think I saw him live.
I might have seen you at the Agora He played at the Agora Ballroom. It might have been later than that.
Yeah.
At,
yeah, I think I saw,
boy,
I saw
he played,
Nugent at the...
He toured and toured and toured. And then, and so did you do session work after that, or... Oh, you played with Joe Walsh again.
With
Joe
Walsh. Kinds of bands. I've been
yeah.
on the road ever yeah. since.
But you've been in touch with Joe Walsh, I guess, all your life, pretty much.
My whole life, yep.
Yeah, yeah. He's great. He's great.
Yep.
Because it's
always,
well, it seems
always
like family.
Joe Walsh.
When, so... So Nugent, as I think as you said, Nugent, you said pulled you out of the bar scene or pulled you out of the bars when you began
right.
playing with him, and then you started playing with Walsh, which I've heard so many people, you know, a lot of times people think these days, and I'm no exception, you turn down an opportunity and think, well, something will come along later, I can go for it next time, and you can't, but I've heard so many people, like Chasm Sultan, I've heard Adrian Belew, you know, Frank Zappa pulled him out of the club, you know, in Nashville. So many people, you know, there's that one moment that you can name, you know, when your career completely turned around because of somebody that found you and,
right.
you know, recognized you for, you know, what you were, for your talent, and like, hey, come on. And it's like from there on, a big change, and that was really it for you, wasn't it? So
that's right. And so whenever you have to, any musician out there listening, whenever you perform, give it your best because you never know who's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't matter if you're playing at a bar or a big place, and if there's five people or 500, it doesn't matter. Give it your best because you never know when you're done if somebody's going to walk up to you and hand you a card and tell them to call them on Monday. And it might be a golden opportunity for you, but so every show is important for me. Still is.
Yeah, I used to tell. I had a TV show for a while, and I'd have bands on, and I would say somebody would talk. I'd go see somebody, and there'd be not many people there. They go, well, there's nobody here much, so we just figured we'd do a little bit of this and then leave. I go, you know, it doesn't matter, and especially now. It doesn't matter how many people are there. It's the fact that somebody could have been doing anything else or could have been just hanging out at home, but they got up, made the effort, got dressed, came out, and saw you. And if they're the only person there, they did get dressed up and come out there and made an effort to come to where you are, sit and listen.
Yeah.
And I figure if this one person, make them feel like they're Elvis and they rented out the whole place for a private show and give them the best.
Sure.
Every time.
Why not?
Yeah, whether they're, yeah, because even if they're not, you know, somebody's going to give you your next gig, it matters, you know, to everybody
that
goes around. But now when Nugent found, you know, you were drumming, and most people know you're a drummer, but you play a lot of instruments.
I do.
Don't you? Because I know Joe Walsh says that, you know, he thinks of you that you approach things, you know, because as a keyboardist.
Well,
I
approach each song differently. I approach each project differently. I don't use one scenario to approach music. It all depends on each individual song, you know. And the more you know about different instruments, the easier it is for you to approach a new song, you know.
Yeah.
Affect how how you hear it. If you don't mind, I've got something I'd like to play, and I know you've heard this before, and it's Joe Walsh talking about you and how he likes the way. If you don't mind, it's just a minute. So this is Joe Walsh.
Vitaly deserves credit because Vitaly is basically keyboard oriented and plays great drums, but he was experimenting and aware of all kinds of things that nobody else was. And of course I was as pioneering as weird guitars I could possibly find. And it's the merging of Vitaly's knowledge and mine that made up so many of those interesting textures. Because Vitaly and I are like, we turn into one thing when we focus. And that's really the secret of stuff like Rocky Mountain Way. He knows exactly what to do if I don't, and vice versa. So I must write him in there if we talk about credit. It's not just my genius. We're both idiots, but together there's something resembling a genius.
I say, I feel like it's almost like you're just like a brother relationship, like twins or something, you know, because you really have to be in tune to each other, you know, with intuition, don't you?
Now, we go back a long way, and we've done a ton of music together, so I hear what he's saying, I appreciate what he's saying, I agree with what he's saying, and I feel the same way about him. You know, we go back a long way, and once in a while in life you find a partner, a musical partner or a business partner or whatever kind of partner, and that you you relate to, and you have good chemistry, and the outcome is becomes brilliant at times, even though, like he said, individually we might be idiots, but together we're geniuses. So I understand what he's saying, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, it's nice to have someone that you can, you know, chemically, you know, the chemistry is good, right? So it's nice to have someone to bounce off of, because, you know, you don't always know everything and neither do they, but together, boy, you come up with some good stuff. So I appreciate his lifelong friendship and you know, all the music we've done together. And when we're not done, we're still working. So.
Oh, no. Not by a long shot. And, yeah, and I think he's rather modest about himself too. There, I think, you know. So,
which
just kind of makes him even more endearing, you know.
Yeah, no, he's a good man. He's a good man, incredible musician.
Oh yeah. So now I have a question that was messaged in here from Greg Boutillier, who's a musician in Atlanta, and his question is, he says, Joe, you know, Joe, I'm a fan, and I want to know if you've ever had a favorite stone of the rolling variety that you worked with, and overall, who was the best artist that you've ever worked with?
Wow. Well, my favorite rolling stone, obviously, is Charlie Watts, the drummer. But I did play on Bill Wyman's solo records. Bill Wyman's the bass player, and I did play on his records. And as far as who's the most brilliant artist I've ever worked with, wow, that's a tough one. I don't think I can. They all sit in a certain place. They're all uniquely the best at what they did because they were all different. You know, as far as, you know, rock and roll guitar players, I worked with Joe Walsh, I worked with Neil Young, I worked with Rick Derringer. I mean, they're all amazing, right? And singers, I worked with Beatles, I worked with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I mean, at Danny Fogelberg. I mean, these are like some of the best singers in the business. So I can't really name one person that is like the best artist. I don't know. That's a very hard question to answer. But as far as the Rolling Stones question, Charlie Watts, you know, he's my hero. I'm a big fan, and just as I am with Ringo Starr as well. But that's a hard one to answer. I don't think a lot of musicians have trouble with that because they, you know, everybody's so different. You know, like I say, each person I've worked with are almost the best at that, you know, and it's hard to pick one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I can imagine. And you know, I think there's something about, too, you know, when you stay busy and you work as hard as you do, and all the musicians get out and work so hard, but there's something to me about the music, the vibrations of it, the camaraderie that keeps you energized and just keeps you learning. You know, I always feel like if I'm not in a state of learning something new, I'm restless. And I feel like that's one of the things, too, about the musicians that you love so much, that we love, that you love, is that you always have something new to learn and to look forward to and to create.
That's right.
Do you feel like that keeps a lot of musicians young? Because, you know,
I mean, look,
Tom Petty's 40th anniversary tour.
Well, you know, it's such a creative business that if you stop thinking of new things to do or better ways to do old things or whatever, new creations, new music, new styles, whatever to explore and all, I don't know. Once you stop doing that, you're done, I think. It's a nonstop learning process. And I just think if that's what's exciting about it. It's that, you know, every day I wake up, what am I going to learn today? You know, and I look forward to it. And I certainly, there'll never be a day in my life where I think I know it all, because that's impossible. So I look for every opportunity to learn something new. Every day, and it's worked out good, and I'm still doing it, and the more I learn, the less I know. I think I find that wow, I still need a long way to go, you know. But it keeps you very healthy, mentally, physically, everything about it is good for you, and that doesn't mean pertains to musicians. I think in all walks of life, you need to discover each day something new. There's so much to discover in life that no matter what you do, there's always something to learn. And you'll never know it all, and you accept that, but also try to learn as much as you can while we're down here, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, Joe, and by the way, if you're listening live right now, you can call in and talk to Joe Vitale. Call 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. Joe, you know, the info I have bio says that, you know, you came from a musical family. You've had over 40 years of touring, recording, and songwriting. And I think, though, for some people, and I got to admit, I'm one that, first of all, I just mostly knew you as a drummer, and I wasn't aware that you played flute, keyboards, that you've written a lot of songs with people. I know that on the things you've worked with, like you said, Dan Fogelberg, Joe Walsh, Ted Nugent, Peter Frampton, the Eagles, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, CSNY, Neil Young, Derringer, Ringo Starr, John Lennon. I mean, I'm going through this list on the here. Keith Richards, Bill Wyman, Ron Wood, Van Morrison, Carl Wilson, Don Felder, Bob Skaggs, for Pete's sake. I mean, does it ever get old, or do you just always feel, you know, just charmed and just happy to be where you are?
I am very happy to be where I am, and I'm hoping to double that list. I look forward to working with somebody I've never worked with. I've worked with a lot of people in my life, very blessed, but you know, there's a lot of people I haven't worked with, and I hope someday I can work with them. I hope to double that list, and every
and
day
give
is
me
a,
some names.
You know, is it
yeah.
give you some names?
Who?
Well,
yeah, who would you like to work with?
I've never worked with Paul McCartney. I'd love to work with Paul McCartney on any level, just, you know, whatever. I've never worked with Robert Plant. I've never worked with, I never worked with Pete Townsend. There's so many people that I admire and would love to work with, and maybe someday I can, and maybe if not, I'll just keep admiring them, you know?
Because I notice so many people now are reaching out to work with some people that they've never worked with, and especially if it's somebody younger, you know, a younger generation coming along or a different style of music, like this latest album by Todd Rundgren. He said that as he, especially last year after the passing of Bowie and Prince, you know, we started thinking about mortality and thinking about wanting to put out something different.
Right.
Because I know I've got things that my regular fans will buy. Like, you know, you've got dedicated fans that, you know, they probably don't care who you're playing with as long as you're driving the beat. But at the same time, though, he said, I didn't want it to be a duet album where one of us just kind of trades off or sings on top. He says, I wanted us to really work together to create a song. And so we did with Trent Reznor and Donald Fagen and several other people. Would you want to do something like that where you actually write with someone else?
I would love to. I said, the list of people I've worked with is large because I've done all kinds of different things. In other words, sometimes I just play drums with them. Sometimes I've done just keyboards with them. Sometimes I sing with them or write with them or arrange or help them produce something. Whatever needs they have, hopefully I can meet them. And in other words, it's not always one thing to collaborate with an artist. It's all kinds of different ways to do that. Obviously, for me as a drummer, that would be the ultimate way to collaborate with someone, is to, you know, me play drums and you play whatever you do. You know, you do whatever you do. But there's all kinds of other ways to, you know, to make music, you know, and collaborate and like I say, no matter what it is, there's always a learning process there. You always learn from other people, especially some of these amazing artists. And you know, it took them a long time as well, a lot of dues, a lot of hard work to get where they are. And they have a great knowledge of what they do, and boy, to tap into that is wonderful. And sometimes you can share things. Hopefully they learn something from you and you learn something from them. And, you know, that's the way collaboration should work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Joe, I honestly didn't know until I saw a while back. I've known you were going to be on the show for a while, and I looked some things up, and I was fascinated and thrilled with the work that you have done with Stephen Stills.
Yeah, I was. I worked with him for a long time and written songs with him. Yes,
you have written songs, and the songs I've heard were great. I even saw a video, I think, of your Stephen Stills introducing your son on the stage.
Right, right. My son's played with us for a while as well. Yes.
Yeah, that must be kind of a thrill.
That was a thrill, yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure he was thrilled to be up there with his dad and with the genius of Stephen Stills. Stephen Stills is one of the great guitarist, singer, songwriters that we've ever had. I'm sure, to be able to write with him must have been fun as well as.
It was very educational. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot from him. He's really, really brilliant.
You've played on. Have you played with Nash and Young as well as?
Yes, I have. Yes.
On some of their work, because you know, they are masters of our generation.
I've worked with them a lot.
You've done a lot of work with a whole lot of people, and I'm glad you're still going strong. Kudos to you for that. I wish you would tour down here somewhere, down in the south somewhere.
Well, we'll get down there eventually.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
That'd be good. Atlanta's a good place. Asheville's a good place.
Yep. I love Atlanta. Great town.
Good place.
Hey, Joe, you've also, if this is not enough, if it's not enough to play drums, to play keyboards, other instruments, to write songs, to tour, you've also done a lot of television and film work.
So
tell us about that. What's that like? Was the last thing you were in was a movie? You wanna?
Yes, I did a movie with Meryl Streep.
Cool. And how was that? Was that? Give us a scoop. Tell us what it was like.
It was one of the most amazing experiences of my life, because I'm not an actor. But in the movie, all I had to do was play a drummer, so I could do that. So the movie was called Ricky and the Flash, and Meryl Streep played Ricky.
Oh, yeah,
and,
you were in Ricky and the Flash?
I was the drummer.
You're the drummer for Ricky and the Flash. How about that?
Yeah.
Well.
And that was a lot of fun, and it was a whole other world I'm not used to, but they made it very enjoyable, and it was a lot of hours and a lot of work, but boy, was it fun. And then when we were done with that, is, you know, back to my regular job, you know, but that for a moment there, I got to see the way those people lived, you know.
Yeah. Now, did Meryl Streep, she sang herself in that.
Yes, she played guitar and sang. Yep,
Did you actually go into the studio like you were making cuts for a soundtrack?
No, that's all live. No, that's
all live.
Yep.
It's all live, huh?
Yep.
Well, you had to rehearse.
Oh, we
you?
Rehearsed a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And where did you do that? Did you do that in the studio?
We rehearsed at a nightclub that was closed down, and then we filmed it, and we did it all in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was fun.
So you should put that in your music resume. You played in Meryl Streep's band.
That's a good
fantastic.
One.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That is a whole different world. So what did you like it? Would you want to do it again? Or was it a different adjustment?
I would do it again, but I liked it. Like I say, I'm not an actor. I've never had any training in that. I don't intend to have any training in that. And but if I had to just, if I had, could just be me or play a musician or be involved with something musical, I'd feel comfortable doing that. Mm-hmm. As I say, those people that do that are so good at that, and they're so trained, and they can change personalities in a second. And that's their job. That's what they do. And she's one of the best. And so we learned from her.
Yeah.
And but we didn't have to really do too much acting other than just be ourselves and be musicians.
Mm-hmm.
So that was thank God for that.
Well, when you did soundtrack work for, say, 40-Year-Old Virgin or as far back as Urban Cowboy, you did all that on a soundstage with the – have you done any work where you actually saw the film as you were going along and you had, a director or a conductor there?
Some we did like that. And some it's just taken from the records, but – I did some stuff for Disney where they actually had footage going, and we played to the footage. That's really fun, actually.
I was wondering how that would be. That's very interesting work.
Yeah, it was fun.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And and did you... You've played in some live television too.
Right. Did a lot of television.
On HBO specials.
Right.
Don Kirshner and other things like that.
We did the Jay Leno show and the Letterman and all that sort of stuff. A lot of bands do that, and that's always fun.
Uh-huh. What do they call you up and say you want to do a season, or do you come in and do several gigs, or hire you?
No, they just call and say we're going to appear on this TV show, and so we go show up and play. That's all.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. you've run the gamut of types of work. It's really admirable to be able to go from genre to genre like that. That's a whole lot of work.
And trust me, that's a lot of work. All the shows and movies you've done, TV, Spy Games, Joe Dirt, 40-Year-Old Virgin, The Warriors, Devil's Rejects, Beverly Hillbillies, History of the Eagles, Fringe 70 shows, and there's many, many more. We have another caller on the line here, too. I think it's one of my favorite musicians from Atlanta. Well, he came to Atlanta from New York, I believe, Mr. Vincent Levy Bryant. Vincent, come on in Madame Perry's salon. Say hello to Joe Vitale.
Hello. Hello.
Hey,
how you doing, Joe? How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm awesome. So glad to meet you in this Madame Perry salon. And once again, I come off of a long, long day, and I'm glad to take this break and jump into the salon with you. Hello, Madame Perry.
Hello. Thank you, Vince. Yeah, Vince is he's a musician, but he's making a film right now. So he's going like, well, kind of like you, Joe, like all the time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I'm just piano player, Joe. I got into this business. And now I'm scoring, but I'm a filmmaker now. So I mean, it's just a whole nother story.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Everybody's
I always downplay it.
You gotta have a script, you know. Everybody's gotta have
yep.
a script.
Yep.
Okay.
I heard that lineup of who you've worked with, and very, very impressive. People don't realize how much work and how much energy goes into the creativity to make an entertainment product or content really, really work with so many different people as far as the audience is concerned.
Yeah, that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
You go in this game because the director, executive branch, executive producers, and the director, and they want what they want, and they'll make you change it 10 million times.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're in a time that, and I was thinking of this when we were talking about the Wrecking Crew, at a time where people that were so long in the background and people didn't know were there that play on some of their favorite records are able to come out and get some credit for once. They're survivors, the ones that are still touring and still going on. I'm glad that for once people are giving credit to some of the people that were, you know, 50
That's
years
for
ago
sure.
were totally unknown.
Well, and another thing too, guys, we was talking about. You know, Vince, when you talk about all the work that goes into it, I mean, Joe's been on the Tom Petty, you know, 40th anniversary tour, and so when I invited him to be a guest, you know, we had to work, like, in between. There's, like, a first leg, a second leg, and he, you know, made some time for me in his rest time in between, which I'm very grateful for, Joe. And not only that, though, you know, people always say when you've traveled that much and you've got all these stories with other musicians and experiences and the way things happen, and somebody always says more than once, you know, you ought to write a book. And
that's for sure.
Yeah, neither. Why don't you should write a book? And, you know, I've had a lot of people on that have had books. You know, Rudy Sarzo, the bass player with Quiet
mm-hmm.
Riot and Ozzy and so forth, his book was called Off the Rails. But it was mostly about his tour with Ozzy and when his friend Randy Rhoads passed. But a lot of people have books now, and musicians I've been reading, just finished John Oates' book, and they're good. And you are no exception, but I think because you had quite a big helper on yours, somebody who you trust a lot, and that is your beautiful wife, Susie.
Well, she spent the whole time with me. We've been, this year makes 44 years we've been married.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is
congratulations.
Rare.
So she was with me when I was playing for $10 in a bar for 3 hours. And so we go way back. We met in 1969, and she's seen the entire career. And so who better to write the book than her, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And no one will have your back more than Susie.
That's right.
That's right.
Going from 16 up, going through everything from playing $10 for $10 in a bar to now, no one will ever have your back more than her. And So what was that like? I mean, what kind of stories did, were there stories that people wanted you to write that you didn't want to, or stories people wanted you to keep out that you put in? Well, how did you choose what you wrote?
The name of my book, the name of my book is Backstage Pass, and what that is it's yeah, it's about me, but not really about me. It's not, it's an autobiography, but it's not about me, is what I'm trying to say. It's about all, it's about my playing with all these people and all my acquaintances on the road, in the studio, and all the years. And so what it is it's stories about all of us that all through the years. And these are all my friends. There's no dirt in my book. There's 750 pictures. There's funny stories, and just all the craziness on the road, all the craziness in the studio. It's the backstage scenes. It's the stuff that goes on that people never see. It's the stuff on tour buses. It's the stuff on airplanes. It's hotel rooms. It's crazy, but it's a no-dirt book, and it's just tons of fun. And we're doing real well with it.
That's got to be boring. Just dating this business.
Yeah.
You're a nice guy.
Well, wait a minute, though, Joe. One thing I keep hearing from a lot of people, and even like last night, you know, my friend Cynthia De Silva, who's been a friend of mine for years, she's been managing the Zombies, and I hear this about a lot of musicians, that when you're on the road and you're touring and things, you know, you get bored. A lot of them have a pretty great sense of humor. So do you have any of those stories in there, too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's loaded with all that stuff. A lot of the times you get on a tour bus after a show and people talk, you know, you just share road stories. And then after a while, people say, you know what? You need to write a book, just like you were saying. And because there's so much funny stuff going on that people never know about, they don't see that part of us. They see us from the stage. But, you know, other than the stage, there's a whole other life that goes on, you know, and a lot of funny, crazy stuff. And I think people really enjoy reading that because you can read about the stuff, other stuff, you know, in the newspapers, in the magazines, the Rolling Stone and all that sort of thing, and online and YouTube and all that. But nobody knows what goes on off the stage, and that's kind of what I wrote about, you know, and a lot of fun.
I remember, I mean, okay, so what kind of stories, like, I know in Rudy's book, Off the Rails, he was talking about touring on the bus, you know, with Ozzy, and he said that when somebody would be drunk or whatever and pass out, that Ozzy, whoever was sober, Ozzy and the other crew, of course, you know, this was his first, you know, big tour like this, so he was kind of like, you know, staying back, seeing what people did, but he said, there was one guy in the band, somebody, Ozzy, shaved half the guy's head and painted the rest of it pink or shaved off his eyebrows while this guy was passed out. I do not remember what musician was. So then they pull over to this little truck stop in a small town. Everybody's in there eating. This guy goes wandering in, looking around, going, what's everybody looking at, you know? And he said, you know, I was young, but I knew right away if I was going to make anything out of myself, I needed to stay sober all the time. So this would never happen to me.
That's true. I think that stuff goes on all the time in bands, and you just don't hear about it, you know.
Yeah, and he did. So, tell what kind of stories can you tell us? Just fun, just well, nothing.
There's nothing bad in my book. It's just not like that. All funny
stuff.
Tell us
a fun one.
Well, I was meeting Joe Walsh and Rick Rosas, the bass player, once at the airport because I had flown from Cleveland. Actually, it was Atlanta. I was flying from Cleveland to Atlanta, and Joe Walsh and Rick Rosas were flying from L.A. to Atlanta, and then all three of us were flying from Atlanta to Tampa to play a show. And this was before 9/11, so you were actually allowed to have scissors in your bag. And so those guys were in first class, and they took the newspaper in first class. They took the newspaper, and they had scissors and scotch tape. and they had cut out and made two complete outfits made out of newspaper. They made pants, shirts, shoes, hats, everything made out of newspaper. And that's how they met me walking off the plane. So I kind of had to act like I didn't know them. And it was, people thought they were crazy. They were drunk as hell. And they had made these outfits. And like I say, this was a long time ago. And, you know, I didn't have a camera like you do on your phone immediately. You know, I didn't get a picture of that, which is I regret. But that's the kind of stuff that people never know about. But that's just one of thousands of things that go on like that. You know, I mean, we never shaved anybody's heads or painted them pink or anything like that. But I'd be afraid, somebody would get in a fight if you did that. But no, we did funny stuff. We had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sounds like fun. Sounds like we got to get the book.
Sorry?
Yeah. Jay, the book is back. Got to get the book. That's what he's saying. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Get the book if you're listening to me now. And, you know, I've ordered mine because I thought it would be an e-book, but it's a hard copy, which is good because that way I'll have all the pictures to look at. But I've ordered mine, and I've been putting up on LinkedIn, I put up links where you could order the book from Barnes & Noble or other booksellers so people can get back to
the past. I'll tell you the best place to get the book. Seriously,
okay.
The best place to get the book is off my website, because not only will you get a better deal, but I'll sign it.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Uh-huh.
Then
that's awesome.
Sure everybody knows.
I'm looking at the buy now button right now.
All right, and that's on Joe Vitale on drums.com.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And how do we get it autographed?
Just whenever you order one, whoever it's for, that's who I sign it to.
Oh, great!
Okay.
If we buy it off the website. Okay.
And I'll sign them, and I can personalize them if you want. You could always write a little note, and I can personalize them or just sign them. And it's the best price. You eliminate all the middle people, and we've done quite well on my website, way better than, I mean, we do business with Amazon and other places, but that's fine, but it's a better deal on my website, and I'll sign them.
Okay,
I like it better like this, okay.
Yeah, I'm
so
looking at it now. I see the, you get a little code, and just click the button. Buy now. Great.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Joe Vitale on drums.com.
That's it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. It's a pleasure to meet you.
You too, Vincent. And I wish you well with your film, man.
I'm headed to the session. It's a much less stressful day, I'm glad to say. But it's a pleasure to meet you, and I look forward to reading your book, Joe.
All right, Vincent, and good luck with your film, man.
Thank you, man. I'll let you guys know. I just shot a proof of concept for New Line Cinemas. I'm going to let everybody know what's going on.
Great.
Cool.
All right. Night-night.
Night-night.
Night.
Bye.
Bye. We done? 6 minutes remaining.
right, that was Joe Vitale's drum solo from Look at Us with Joe Walsh in 1991. Hi, guys. Did you miss me?
Hi.
Hi. All right.
Hi.
Well, hi. I was disconnected and got lost, and now I see that Joe is gone. So since we've only got 3 minutes left, I just want to say thank you so much to Joe Vitale for being on Madame Perry Salon. I will have the link to his website on all my social media to get the book Backstage Pass, written by him and his beautiful wife, Susie. Don't forget his son, Joe Vitale Jr., is also a drummer. Duffy Odom, Greg Boutillier, and Vincent Levy Bryant. You got any goodbye words for the audience?
Bye, everybody. See you next time.
Goodbye. See you next time. And coming up, well, we got all kinds of stuff coming up. So go to Madame Perry Salon on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and everywhere else, and you'll know who's coming soon, and definitely subscribe, okay? Thanks to everyone who's on here. Thank you guys for staying with me. And the words of Jennifer Perry Tomlin, everybody's got to play.